You're listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network, featuring unconference sessions and other related discussions from around the Southeast.
So this is the Erotic Podcasts and Sexy New Media panel. I'm Regina Lynn. I write the Sex Drive column at Wired.com, which explores the intersection of sex and technology. I was going to introduce you guys. Would you rather introduce yourself?
We can introduce each other.
Okay, so Amber. Can you see Amber with me standing here? Sorry, I'll stand over here. So, Amber, go ahead.
No, I want to know what you wrote about me.
I wrote, today is one of the co-founders of the Georgia Podcast Network.
For a good time, call.
Just thinking, she wears a thing. No. I just
ripped out the page from the program.
So go ahead if you have.
So that's basically what I'm going to say. I'm the co-founder of the Georgia Podcast Network, along with Rusty, the photographer there in the audience.
Hello.
And I organized the Sex 2.0 conference, which was last month in Atlanta, and Regina was there.
You could say the subtitle of it.
Oh, the intersection of feminism, social media, and sexuality. That was the conference. It's going to be in D.C. next year, apparently, so stay tuned. Yeah,
I am so there.
I am Nobilis. I am the author of 2 ebooks, soon to be 3, available at ecstasybooks.com. I have also have a print book at Lulu. I have a podcast of erotic short stories, excerpts, and serials. We just finished a serial of Magical Clothes, which is the erotic sequel to The Emperor's New Clothes. That's pretty much enough.
I'm Helen E.H. Madden. The EH stands for anything from extra horny to extremely hyper. I am an erotica writer and podcaster. My first erotica novel is right there. I do a podcast called Heat Flash, www.heatflash.libsyn.com. It's erotic speculative short fiction, usually 1,000 words or less, unless I'm particularly verbose, and then that's a special issue. I also work as an editor for the Erotica Readers and Writers Association, doing the item section of the website. Item is Inside the Erotic Mind, where we discuss whatever is currently hot in sex and sexuality. If you've got a question about anything on sex and you want to hear what people are thinking about it, you send it in to ERWA, they forward it to me, and I ask all the crazy people who are on our mailing list, so what do you think of such and such? And then we put it together as an article for the website. I also am a cartoonist. I have 2 animated cartoons up on Adam Films called Stick Figure Porno 1 and Stick Figure Porno 2.
Okay, so what I thought I would do is I prepared an interrogation for the panelists.
My name is Bondage.
To get things going, and then I'll switch it over and we'll, you know, make it a discussion. We should just pull all the chairs in a circle. But before we begin, I want to put you all on the spot like I did in the last panel, and I want to know, raise your hand if you blog or podcast or play in a virtual world or use Twitter or whatever, some kind of media where you're talking about sex and erotica and sexually explicit things. Okay, so you're all... Okay, good.
How many hands do I get to raise?
Yeah, I know. It's and feet and toes. Just because if we had a room full of total newbies, we needed to start with some definitions. But since we don't... What I want to ask the panelists, and I think I'm going to just start with Amber and go down, or you guys jump in as you need. What is new media, and more importantly, why is it sexy?
New media is, I think the definitions kind of vary depending on who you ask, but basically I think the distinguishing factor is like old media or mainstream media, you think of like they have... it's being controlled by somebody else, like dictating policy and dictating, you know, editorial standards and that kind of thing. And new media is the inmates running the asylum, but in a good way. it's, you know, a lot of people say it's the great equalizer, and I don't think we're quite there yet, but I think that's what it has the potential to be. And it's sexy because I think people generally are sick and tired of being told to shut up and to not talk about certain things and to not tell their own stories and to not talk about how they see the world and experience the world. And the tools of new media give us the opportunity to do those things. That's why it's totally sexy.
All of that's true. I think one of the other things that is particularly sexy about what I think what makes new media new is the creator distribution model. It is distributed by the creator. That's, to me, what is the most important thing. And because they're distributing it themselves, that's why they don't have an editor and a publisher and a board of directors all trying to tell them what's going on. What's great about it, I think, is the honesty of it. Because people are distributing it themselves, they're not filtering it to what they think anybody else is necessarily going to want. They're just putting out what they like. One of the stories that I had recently in my podcast was I got off of a website called DeviantArt, which is mostly visual art but also has a good deal of stories, and some of them really sexy. The author really wanted to have a story that had a lingerie fetish and involved two women. So the author wrote it because it's kind of a DIY type of thing. And it turned out totally hot. I found the site kind of trolling around there, found the story, and then got someone with an absolutely wonderful voice, Christiana Ellis, to read it for the show. And I've gotten more people calling my voicemail line or sending an email saying, oh, I'll be in my bunk.
Keep in mind, I have not one but two degrees in communications. So I have the technical background in traditional media, being television, radio, newspaper, etc. For me, new media is anything that I can put on my desktop or my laptop and use to produce the content myself. And I'm not just talking podcasts, ebooks, animated movies. I'm also thinking 3D artwork. We were talking in the previous panel about digital art. You can now get your virtual Barbie and Ken dolls and buy genitalia for them, and props and whips and chains and handcuffs and all sorts of things, and put together your own pictures or animations, whatever you want. I think it's sexy because it puts the power to create content into the hands of the people who want it most. And there's very little that anybody else can do to stop you.
According to Henry Kissinger, power is the ultimate aphrodisiac.
Power is the ultimate aphrodisiac. To be able to do something, to manipulate it, to have it the way you want it yourself. And if you don't get it right the first time, you have the opportunity to do it again and again and again. Yes, that's sexy.
I'm going to jump ahead. I would like to know, I'm sure we all do, before we get into maybe some more advice and questions and things, how has your creation of and participation in sexy new media affected your actual maybe outlook on sexuality, your own sex life, for example? However explicit you want to be about that. It's midnight! I just want to kind of... As someone who writes a column for a publisher, I'm very much... Ever since we got bought by the big publisher, they've taken a lot of the sex out of the sex column. It's very frustrating. I'm still trying to subversively get as much of the important stuff out there as I can. But it's very different from what I can do on the radio show, and it's very different from what I could do if I had energy left over to do it myself.
Oh, you just hit on the key topic right there. Energy left over. We're producing a product these days.
Yeah, I mean,
how that affects your sex life.
Radio is great. You show up and talk. When I was podcasting, it was so much. But anyway, so what kind of changes should people be aware of if they are going to start getting sexy with new media?
You're saying what you want and you're what you choose to put out there, but there are other people not just watching but participating as well. to some degree or another, whether it's from blog comments, whether you choose to allow those or not, or, you know, to a much more participatory degree. You just have to be prepared for that, I guess. I don't know if that's really what you're asking, but, like, it can be a little daunting sometimes if you're not really expecting, you know, criticism, like somebody to basically criticize or like say, no, you're wrong for like, this is my life. Like, this isn't something to argue about. This isn't like a right or wrong. This is my life. And, you know, somebody's criticizing you for those sorts of things. I guess you just have to be prepared to set an expectation of how you'll handle it.
Develop a thick skin. Mm.
But I don't like that. I don't like that advice because I think that makes it okay for people to treat you like shit. So I think hopefully what new media can help us do is to all have more empathy. Hopefully. And sometimes I get very discouraged. But I think, I mean, ideally that would be, you know, people can really understand each other without all the artifice and the bullshit of trying to keep up appearances and everything. I hope that's what can happen. And the other thing that can happen when you get really involved with new media and social media and everything is you'll be doing something, like, you might be doing something really hot and sexy and you'll think, this would make a great blog post. How am I going to blog this?
Oh, yeah.
Writing erotica, just writing it and... when I started it several years ago, posting it on literotica.com, I was doing it because I was very frustrated sexually. I'm in a monogamous marriage. I don't have the kind of agreement with my wife that will allow me to have too many other sexual outlets, and she's disabled and for a long time was pretty much incapable of having anything that you would look at and call sex. Now, there was a lot of intimacy, but there was a lot of frustration there for a long time. That's gotten a little better lately, but not to go into too much detail, I used writing erotica as a way of kind of expressing that side of myself in a way that wouldn't cheat on...
You're about to knock that piece of equipment right off there.
Sorry. It was a way of expressing that side of myself without breaking the agreement that I had with my wife. And it was interesting in that it did start to involve other people when people were commenting on my stories or suggesting things, or where later on when I started doing the podcast, having other people read for it, things like that. It's involved a continuing negotiation there. And I think that's about as far as I want to go without talking to my wife first.
Yes, Paul?
You're going to lock up for me?
I will lock up for you.
Thank you very much.
Turn out the lights, that kind of thing?
Yeah.
Sure.
Kick people out. What was the question again? I think it morphed.
How has sexy new media changed your outlook? Or I guess I could phrase it as, what have you learned from it about sexuality? I mean, you can take it and go with it.
You can do it on a budget, or you can spend a lot of money on it. And seriously.
Talking about the sex or the new media?
Both. I think... if somebody's going to get involved in these new media things, that's one thing they need to keep in mind, is how much do they want to invest in it. And it is sort of like entering a new sexual lifestyle. You might want to try before you invest heavily into it to see if this is what you want to do. The issues she talks about with, you're putting yourself out there and you can get shot in the face for what you talk about when you're talking about your life or you're writing your stories or you're showing your artwork. It can happen, and you might just want to test the waters a little bit to find out if that is something that you do want to get into. Having said that, it's extremely liberating. A lot of the people I know who are writing erotica use pen names, and I understand why they use pen names, because you have a job that you need to keep. You live in a community where you have to live with other people. I don't use a pen name, and that's mainly because Playgirl pissed me off when they published my first story and then gave the byline to the name of the main character rather than to me. I'm like, wait a second! I wrote that story. That's mine. And thus, I have used my name all the time. But it's very liberating to me to be able to say, yes, I write about sex. I podcast about sex. I do sexually explicit images. And what I really enjoy is the fact that I can do sexually explicit images and stories, etc., that fall in line with my philosophy and my beliefs about sex. I do not do female pinups. Now, I will do male pinups. And I've had quite a few interesting conversations with men who have found out that, why don't you do the females? Do the females. Everybody does naked women. Well, but nobody wants to look at naked men. Oh, I can think of a few people who would argue with you on that. It's liberating. It's empowering. It does have its... it does have some of its pitfalls, its cons. So if you're going to get into it, test the water, see what you want to do and how you want to go about doing it. And that includes everything from spending money to investing your time and your effort and your life.
When you say decide how much time, effort, money, etc., there is a very, very low floor on how much time and effort. There is an erotica podcast out there called I Love Your Fruit. The woman who does it writes the stories herself, records them on an iRiver, which is a very cheap little device, uploads them onto a $5 a month Libsyn account, puts one up every month, maybe, but because of the way the RSS works, whenever it comes out, I get the next one in there. So the great thing about it is you can choose how much
you can
commitment to make to it. Now, you know, with me, with $1,000 of equipment in the studio and hosting fees and all the time I spend on it, that's, you know, a higher level of commitment.
Mm-hmm.
But that's actually, compared to, you know, a lot of podcasters, it's
that's actually, high. That's, we're at, technologically, we're at the low end, and I'm even lower than he is because I have a $30 mic I picked up at Radio Shack. I spend a little more money on software, but that's because I also use the same software for the animated movies that I do, and I can use it for a variety of other projects. I'm so into new media, not necessarily just because of the erotica stuff, but also because this is what I'm doing as my freelance business, so it pays off all the way around. The investment for me has not been that much. The time investment, I will never get paid for the time I have put into some of these things, but then this really gets to be a... sort of something you do it because you love it. Don't do it because you think you're going to make a ton of money off of it. You might gain some sort of cult status if you go about it regularly, consistently, very determinedly to do it, and you continue to put the content out there and get your name out there. But cult status does not equal money. A podcast is like a hole in the ground. Throw the money in.
So I have a couple other questions. Should we come up to a dry spell? But it is your turn. What do you guys want to know? Why did you come? Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I'll just make sure. All right. Yes. One of the things that tends to be unique about podcasts is the fact that they're interactive. They go both ways. And in general, when you talk about the other podcasts, there's a lot of stuff about back and forth with an audience. And obviously, there is an audience for this, but because of the subject matter, do you find that your audience is different? And a lot of times they talk about connectivity with other groups and other podcasters. Is that easier or more difficult? And to avoid, like, yes-no answers, how would you go about doing that, and what areas, groups do you...
I've been talking to podcasters all weekend, and they are more than happy to talk to me. Mm-hmm. They like what I'm podcasting about. Keep in mind, though, this is BaltCon, which happens to have an adults new media track. And the other podcasters we're talking to, while they don't have erotica podcasts, they do deal with material that has adult themes. So that's not a problem. Audience-wise, I'm like at episode 39 on my podcast, and I'm looking at how I could do things differently to get more feedback from my audience. I had over 2,000 downloads last month, and it looks like I will have more than that this month. I'm getting to the point where I'm starting to get in a couple of emails every month, and I want to start doing something where either I'm introducing the stories and discussing them, or I do a special episode where I talk about what goes on behind the scenes in the podcast, or I'm uploading Adobe PDF documents that would include digital artwork, erotic digital artwork, to give away as freebies to people who are subscribed to the RSS, something to get people to start interacting a bit more and emailing me, leaving comments on the blog, whatever it is. So
The episode that's going to go on live on my site in roughly an hour and some minutes will be episode 72 of my weekly show. I am just now getting to the point where, with my 1,000 or so regular listeners, I'm getting an email once a month. I'm getting a comment on a post once every couple of weeks, and I might get a call on my audio comment line every 3 or 4 months. And I think that I get less feedback than other types of podcasts, because I think there's a lot more people who just aren't willing to admit that they like it. I one point early on, around episode 30 or 40 or so, I had a kind of a challenge to my listeners to say, I listen to Nobilis Erotica, and call my line and leave a message, or else send me an MP3 that says that. And I got 4 or 5 people who were willing to do that. One or two even left their names. And that was fun. And I got some feedback on it, and that was good. Didn't turn into a conversation, because as soon as they did that, they shut up again. I have not really concentrated hard on pushing the feedback aspect of it so far. I've been really concentrating on trying to create a kind of a body of work and a history, because people don't like to submit those kinds of things, something they see as transient. They want to be part of a community that's going to last. So I think I'm ready now to do a lot of the same things you're talking about as far as community building stuff. But I think that there is a certain reticence.
People are nervous, I think, just because of the reasons you said. I mean, we have a lot of reasons to be nervous about issues surrounding sexuality, and I can understand why people are nervous, but I also know that the most listened to, downloaded, commented on episode of our podcast, which, by the way, for those who don't know, the podcast Rusty and I do, is it's not a sex podcast. I mean, it's mostly focused on issues, people, events in and around Atlanta where we live, but we also do other things where we just talk about stuff going on in our lives or whatever we want. Sometimes that includes sex, because that's a part of our life. And our most popular podcast to date has been one where we reviewed 2 swingers clubs in Atlanta. And I think that, like, I don't, people are looking for this information, and it's good to get the information from other people, you know, who have actually been there, and you feel like you're just sitting out talking to, like, regular people. I mean, I guess we're regular people. I don't know. But, like,
you're irregular
people. I mean, and I don't know if it's a rule somewhere that if you have a swingers club that you have to have a shitty, terrible website. Kind of like bed and breakfast. They also always have shitty, terrible websites. This must be a rule somewhere. That podcast has been the most popular. And, you know, we don't get a whole lot of feedback, but we do get people, we do get people coming up to us, like, in real life and telling us, you know, I really enjoyed this or whatever. I don't remember what the original question was, but Nobilis calls a lot. And I think
Nobilis calls all the podcasts he listens to.
He's the best.
I found out he and I were listening to the same podcast.
I gotta call your podcast. I mean, I have to be honest, I don't call any podcasts, but I feel like now I really need to step
up. If you're listening to... if anybody who is a podcasting fan ought to be... If the podcast you're listening to solicits comments at all, some of them don't. Some of them don't care. It's like, okay, well, you know what? Neither do I. But the ones that... Going back to kind of the mother of all feedback podcasts was the voicemail show for Winging It. They made a whole nother show just as long as the first one every week of the voicemails that they got. So you can get quite an incredible community together if you're lucky. Now, I... don't have enough to play even one feedback on every show. I'm lucky when I have one. But if you're a fan of a podcast, tell them, because there's nothing somebody in any kind of new media loves more than getting somebody coming back and saying, hey, I listened to show number such and such. It was great.
And I would say the same thing holds true for if you are reading stories online, if you see artwork online, any sort of, mm-hmm. you know, people put this stuff out there. This is all the new media. It's coming across the interwebs. It's getting out there. People put it out there. They want, in theory, they want feedback. Some people, you don't really want the feedback, in which case they should not be putting it out there in the first place. Right. And some people, if you have constructive criticism, don't want that at all either. Me, I don't care what you want to say. Say it and send it to me, because I want to hear it. I want to know that there's somebody out there looking at the artwork, reading the stories, listening to the podcast.
It's interesting to me that bloggers, text blogging, pictures and whatnot, you know, people are always leaving comments, and the bloggers all comment on each other, and it's a well-known way to drive traffic to your own blogs. If you comment on someone else, you put your URL all discreetly in there as if you were not only commenting to get traffic. In podcasting, I think we still have an extra step of, it's more effort, in air quotes, to pick up the phone and leave a message.
Well, I just hate the phone, so for me, like, that's what that's about.
And it's not in the car. I mean, I definitely would rather pick up the phone and leave you than text, although I text in the car all the time.
I hate picking up the phone, period. I'm home all day with a toddler. I ain't picking up the phone.
What I'm wondering is, in terms of the sex podcast and the erotic podcast, are people still worried that, even though you don't have to leave your name and, you know, none of us have the time to track their phone numbers or whatever, are people worried about leaving even their voices on the podcast?
I think so.
Yeah, I think they are.
Nobody's actually said it as much, but I get far more text comments than I do voice.
See, I have not bothered with the voicemail at this point, because I'm a stay-at-home mom. That is, the bulk of my time is devoted to chasing around after small children and getting them to and from preschool and getting them fed and this, that, and the other. And
see,
I work
when
they.
See what happens when you have a sex podcast.
when we did the interview for the Balticon podcast, Paul Fisher's comment was, "Wow, you guys have families? I'm like, Paul, where do you think families come from?" And it does surprise people, but you know,
in his case, it comes from hiring somebody.
Well, mine were miracles of modern science. But what the hell was I saying?
I don't have
voicemail. This is where you get back to the investment thing and the investment in time. I'm doing everything in the wee hours of the morning, in the late hours of night, and during my youngest 2-hour nap.
And once you start a feature,
you must maintain it. So that's why I always think very carefully before doing anything like Twitter or keeping up with blogs.
Any other questions from our sex-savvy podcasting audience?
Ask us anything. Anything you're curious about.
What do you wear when you pop down?
Flannel pajamas and bathrobe. Because I'm podcasting. I get up at 5:45 in the morning because I live next to Langley Air Force Base and Langley Speedway. And if I don't get up before the crack of dawn, then I'm trying to podcast while the F-22s are doing flybys over my house. Or else the kids are up and you can hear them yelling in some other part of the house, even with two doors closed between us. So, there you go. That's the realities of sex podcasting.
Go ahead.
I'll ask two questions.
Well,
come on up here.
Yes.
Come on up here and take the conversation.
I thought we were sitting in front, but no.
We don't bite much.
One of the things is, you mentioned earlier that being bought out by a larger house, it kind of limits what you can do. And one of the things about podcasting, as mentioned earlier, was that it's a little more freeing. So, but considering the way society is in general and some of the still taboos out there, is there anything that you can see that would still be taboo in what you're doing as a podcaster? Is there a line that erotic podcasters should be careful of?
There are certain subject matters within erotica that are generally considered taboo that you have to be conscious of. And we were talking about this in the previous panel, issues of consent. you cannot find anybody, you have, will have a very hard time, I should say, you probably can find somebody who will publish stories about incest, bestiality, pedophilia, anything, necrophilia, anything where one of the parties cannot consent to the act that is taking place. These are illegal, they break the law, and you are invoking the wrath of the federal government if you get into this. But at the same time, there are books out there in popular literature, because they are literature and not erotica, that can deal with these sorts of things. And so I like to write things that push my boundaries. And I have written stories where I thought the story was amazing, I thought the story was really hot, and when I was done with it, I sat there and I said, God, I am going to be in so much freaking trouble for writing this story. Oh, well. The boundaries, there are some external boundaries. A lot of it is also internal boundaries. What are you comfortable doing? And are you willing to be a little uncomfortable doing some things?
How much input do your partners have in what you put out in your erotic podcasts?
My husband built my computer.
Well, we did a podcast where we tested the female condom. So there's an input joke there.
Too late, you already made it.
Too obvious.
My wife doesn't edit my stories. I often will have her read the stories for the podcast, especially if the story is from a female point of view. She's always been happy to do it, but I do find myself holding back a little bit when I know that it's something she's going to read. And she isn't the only female voice that I've had on my podcast, and whenever I send a story to someone to say, would you read this for my show? Let me know if it's a little too edgy. And and every time they go, what are you talking about? I'd love to read this. Yeah.
I'm looking for the dirty part.
Oh, I get to say that on the internet.
Well, I recently had my first, like I said, lesbian story on the podcast, and I thought long and hard about who I was going to ask to read it. I certainly wasn't going to read it myself. I didn't feel like I had the authority to read it myself.
That's funny, because if I were to ask somebody to read a gay story, I would have to think long and hard about who I would ask to read a gay story. But I would have no problems thinking of, you know, a dozen women I could say, would you read a lesbian story that I wrote?
I think that there's a lot more acceptance of female homosexuality than male.
And female erotica writers, that was one of my questions here too. So.
Well, if we could jump to that, I recently had an interesting experience in that regard. I was invited, actually an invitation was laid out for romantic erotica writers, and some of my stuff is very romantic, to come on and be interviewed. And I volunteered, and it was done over Skype. And the interviewer contacted me 5 minutes before go time, because this was a streaming thing, it had a particular schedule, and said, oh, I'd like to talk to Nobilis. And I said, well, that's me. It's like, oh, you're a man. I said, yes, I am. I've never really concealed it. She was completely flabbergasted. It became a topic of conversation. She recovered fairly well, but people are surprised to find men doing it. And I occasionally wonder if people out there think that I'm some kind of pervert for writing this stuff. Well, it's like, well, okay, yeah, I am.
People.
But
I'm
a
pervert.
Yeah. Because I'm looking, the audience is half female, half male.
Roughly.
Yeah,
roughly.
You are just presenting yourself.
If we're wrong, don't worry. We don't mind being wrong.
So, and I know that when you're right, women have much more freedom online and in social media to express sexuality, because we can call it empowerment and feminism and politics and casting off the patriarchal blah, blah, blah.
Don't tase me, bro.
Whereas particularly straight men face the barrier of
it's smutty, you're a creep, you're a predator, etc.
I think the reason for that is because women don't have that freedom really anywhere else, and men have that freedom everywhere else. So it's kind of like this is our space where we can finally...
I don't know. I feel like on the Erotica Readers and Writers Association, because we have a very active writers list, and we have quite a few men and women on the list
the
together.
Majority are still women, though.
But the number of men seems higher than what you would see maybe in erotic romance. I think I don't consider myself a romance writer. I'm not interested in writing about romance. I'm interested in writing about sex and the consequences of having sex and what's involved in having a sexual relationship and, you know, the various things that go along with it. Everything from having babies, being impotent, to sexually transmitted diseases, and, you know, all the what-if questions that go along with that in terms of science fiction, fantasy, and horror. One of my favorite stories is, what if you had a female dominant who could see the future every time she had an orgasm?
That's a great story.
I've got a whole novella. I'm waiting to hear back if somebody will publish a collection of stories that is the main, that is the centerpiece of the collection. But it's not romance. I'm not interested in romance, and I get really irritated when people say, so you write romance. I'm like, no. And there's you know, in my marriage, if anybody's romantic, it's going to have to be my husband. It is not going to be me. And so I get irritated. I get the flip side of what you're getting. But I think, you know, people expect guys to write the pornographic, very explicit, hardcore stuff, and women are still supposed to write the flowery purple prose. You know, his crimson helmeted, swollen, urgent member, sort of a thing. And like, it's the worst. Just call it, please. So I get the flip side of what he gets. And I have no idea why. Except that I'm female.
But nothing kills a good erotic story than some stupid euphemism for genitals. Her sex. Or like,
unless you are trying to make it funny.
Well, right.
Well, yeah.
Yes.
In the last panel I was just in, we were talking, it was actually more romantic erotica authors. And we were going around and talking about what kind of defines that kind of thing. And one person came along and said, well, you know, we don't use those crude porno terms. Like, what? You mean like cock and pussy? She's like, yes, no, we don't use that. And all the other authors around the table going, yes, we do.
Yes, they do. I have nothing against romance. I certainly have nothing against erotic romance. Just so I make that clear.
Good.
But I'm not writing it and I'm not reading it.
So to sort of follow up on that, if you have any comments about, particularly if there is a particular kink that you are, you know, that a particular piece is geared towards, if you have any comments about finding your audience, other than do you throw it out there into the void and hope that somebody connects with it?
That's what I did.
Or do you make a conscious attempt to network?
I threw it up to the void. Here, don't kill my baby!
There are publishers who specialize. If you're going to try to get published, either in e-books or in print or whatever, there are publishers who specialize in particular sorts of kink. There are BDSM story publishers. There are gay publishers. There are interracial publishers. And when somebody goes to their website to download a book or to buy a book, they know kind of what they're getting. There are other ones that are much more broad and can do all different kinds of themes. But generally speaking, when it comes to the marketing of that book, you have to be very clear about what's in it because, especially in erotica, readers have expectations. And if you break them,
and there are
you get
things
in big
that
trouble.
Some people are not comfortable reading about, and that was something else we've talked about before. When we submit stories to our online group, we put in, I call them advertisements, call them warnings, which say, you know, this is a male story. There's spanking in here, or there is bondage, or whatever it is. And if people don't want to read that, they don't have to. And if people are looking for that, then they can read that.
Actually, I was going to sort of follow up with that, because that's elsewhere in fandom, in fanfic.
Yes, and it is a fanfic.
There's a code of, like, you know, when you submit something, you've got, like, almost like a ratings board.
And I actually considered initially doing that for the podcast, but then I thought that would be so contrary to what I was trying to do with the podcast. Your comment had been, you never know what to expect what's coming out of that podcast. I never know what to expect what's coming out of that podcast. I sit down with a notebook very early in the morning. I've got a cup of coffee. I've got one of these and a ballpoint pen, and I've got a very general theme, and I just start throwing down words and phrases until I get something clicks and I have stories. All I'm looking for is it has to have something to do with sex, and it has to have some sort of speculative fiction element. Beyond that, you can get a you can get a heterosexual scene, you can get a gay scene, you can get a lesbian, you could get masturbation, you could get orgies, it could be horror, fantasy, sci-fi, alternate reality.
It gets boring writing the same thing over.
And I don't want to write the same thing over, and that was the whole idea behind it, was how many different kinds of erotic stories could I write? And they have run the gamut from being very hardcore to being, there wasn't even a sex scene in the story, yet the story dealt with some aspect of sex. The one I'm thinking of is Rock Hard, where the guy, the old king is impotent, and he's going on his last grand adventure before he dies to prove he is still a man.
This goes back to how we started about Amber's comment on The Great Equalizer and doing your own stuff. I have two very different books right here. And both of them on the back say, oh, the category for this book is, let's see, sexuality section. You guys in the new media, well, us guys in the new media, have the power of tags, categories.
But we can't get on iTunes.
Who needs iTunes anyway?
There is a problem with the tags. One of my best early stories, something called The Package. It is about a woman who permits herself to be bound up with duct tape and pleasured by a mysterious lover in a kind of an anonymous sex situation. She always has the power to stop it at any moment by just pulling her hands out of the ropes that are holding her up. But she's, you know, and the gender of the person that she's with is never revealed. The person whispers in her ear. A whisper is very difficult to tell a gender from. The person is...
Unless it's your whisper. Keep going.
And so the first time I posted it was actually on one of the free sites, I think it was Literotica, and it was supposed to get a pairings code. Well, what do I put? F?
And if you're writing about aliens, and the aliens are of... indeterminate, or both, or all three genders, don't ask. Or you can ask, and I will direct you to the story online. Then, you know, we're really putting the speculative into the...
Those tags become
meaningless.
Well, I mean, that's where you guys are breaking those walls down. Eventually there will be many more tags, which will filter out into the greater culture, which will have many fewer restrictions, and then bookstores won't know where to help.
And that's why we're all going to have to buy it online. And my favorite tag is going to be the "What the hell is this?" tag.
My question for the folks writing erotica is: obviously, you have to live up to very, you know, clear and sort of defined expectations for a genre, because people. Well, you were mentioning that a minute ago, that, you know, people will kind of freak if there's something that's not marketed clearly, or
that it
my sort of
it depends on where you're talking about. In the podcast, I do not do that in the podcast.
Yeah,
I don't tell people what's coming up front. They know that they can encounter anything.
Yeah. On the writing list, that's another matter, because we're looking for critiques. We are asking people, please read this, go through it, and tell us what you think about it as a story. Because I like having people who enjoy reading erotica cast their eyes over the story and let me know, does it or does it not work? And I get a lot of comments back of, I don't know where the hell you come up with this shit.
Another thing is,
I don't get any complaints because
for
they
sale.
Know roughly what they're getting into.
Also, if you're putting something up for sale, you have to be very clear about what you're selling.
But yeah, when you talk about the stuff that's for sale, the stuff where you do have to sort of live up to those expectations, do you find that confining? How do you deal with that?
No, because no matter what I write, there is some kind of a tag to put on it to say this is the kind of thing you're going to find in this book.
I was trying to come up with various blurbs for the book. It just came out Thursday, and so I was spending a great part of Thursday night doing my elevator spiel and how I would describe it and everything. I'm like, I am so freaking screwed. The book was inspired by a fantasy writer who I don't think is all that popular anymore, although she's still my favorite fantasy writer. And I was like, if I mention the name Tainith Lee, how many people here are actually going to...
Everybody here.
would that name still be popular? Because it wasn't that long ago. She's in England, babe. The goddess empress of science
from England? Where is she?
I'm sitting there trying to... You know, they talked about the concept blurb. Take your two movies that... most likely would describe it and put it together to, and all I could come up with, it's Anne Rice's Sleeping Beauty series, but with a real plot. But yeah, if you do want to be able to communicate to people you are selling stuff to what it is you want to sell them, because you do not want to be refunding their money. I didn't want this. This is not what you told me. This was one thing, and you gave me another. It's in that case, it is truth in advertising because you are exchanging money. But when it comes to the podcast, the only money involved is the money I'm throwing in the hole in the internet to keep the podcast going.
That leads me to my last question. We have about 6 more minutes, so I'm going to take a couple of them, and then I'm sure we're not all going straight to bed after this. You both are doing fiction stories, regular erotica. Amber and Rusty are doing, you know, Atlanta, and you sometimes touch on sex. Where do you guys see the difference between the nonfiction, or we're talking about our own sex lives, or the swinger clubs, and the erotica side that is presumably fiction?
People always ask, you really do that stuff, don't you? Like, no, I'm not a gay man.
Like I did before I had a dog.
I think the audiences are totally the intent. Not, I don't want to say the audiences are totally different, because obviously people who like erotica might also listen to ours. But like the intent, I guess, is different. They're writing fiction.
We can make stuff up.
Yeah. I mean, it's. The possibilities are...
Well, I'm thinking in terms of, for example, you guys said in the last panel that you had lost a prospective client or something in your day job, your consulting,
it's
because
not
they
day
found
job.
Out you had talked about sex. Whereas if you're doing erotica podcasts...
This is my day job.
Do you have another layer of distance of, that's just fiction? Do you have less of a distance? I mean, just trying to think of... People talking about their own sex lives versus
I would
writing
think
fictional
I think people
sex.
Would kind of freak either way.
Well, I would think.
The thing is,
I consider
my erotica part of my sex life.
Yeah.
Right. Mine is too.
Yeah, I mean, I think people too. Would freak no matter what if they're really going to. But I do. My impression is that if you are an erotica writer, you kind of have the plausible deniability of just like saying, it's fiction.
That.
I don't know how that would fly. I mean, that's just my... I don't know.
Right.
Because, you know, when we put out our podcast, it was like, this is us testing the female condom. You know, we tested it, now we're recording, now we're going to do this, now we're recording while we're lying in bed. Like, it's pretty obvious. There's really no way to get around that.
there's no way for me to deny anything I've ever written simply because I don't use... pen name, but then I'm not in a situation where I can get fired.
Well, not that you want to deny it. I'm just thinking the challenges are different.
There's no...
Yeah. Did your husband get fired?
No, because he's a federal employee.
Not a second grade teacher.
He's not
Good.
A second... And we're... It's well... And he understands what I do. He doesn't read the stories because the stories are not geared toward what he would find interesting. He, you know, just like anybody else, he has his own particular interests and quirks when it comes to sex. And he knows that I'm like way out there on planet Pluto writing some of this stuff. I'm not even necessarily writing to my kinks and interests sexually so much as I'm writing to what interests me up here intellectually and emotionally in terms of story. So I feel like I am... The level of separation between me and my podcast is like that.
Yeah.
There isn't any because it's whatever is in here is coming straight out onto the page. This is my life. If I didn't do this, I would have to find something else equally as creative or I would go nuts. Because I when I say I put the stay and stay at home mom, I'm not kidding. I can't do the Birkenstock mommy thing. I have to have that part of my life that is so completely anti suburbanite desperate housewife's mom, otherwise I would have no identity.
That is why new media rules, because when Condé Nast bought Wired.com and they took sex and me and personal perspective and like, you know, I'm right there with y'all, out of the column and made it a sex tech beat reporter, it has taken me a year and a half to stop bitching, whining, moaning, and saying I'm going to quit. But then I don't, because then I have another column. I don't have time to quit. So. Thank you for opening the doors, podcasters.
The song you heard in this podcast was Garden by Cargo Cult, available only on Magnatune.com. Thanks for listening to UnConcast on the Georgia Podcast Network. If you have recorded or are planning to record a discussion that you think would make a good episode of UnConcast, email us at info@gapodcastnetwork.com to learn how you can submit it.